I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Nutanix. I'm in Sandton to talk to Pai Venugopal, Vice President of Customer Success at the NASDAQ-listed Enterprise Cloud Computing Specialist. Pai is joined by Paul Reinhardt, Nutanix's Regional Sales Director. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Paul, let me start with you. Nutanix is hosting its second .next event here in South Africa, is it?
It's actually its fifth.
Fifth, okay.
We've been in the country since February 2014, where two of us joined. So this is the fifth event we run. I think we had 80 people in a conference center in Sandton. We're expecting about 700 tomorrow.
Wow. Okay. So this is part of a global tour called .next that Nutanix runs. What's the purpose of it, and what should we expect at this year's South African event?
So I think .next is our signature event. We've had them globally. We run them in the US, and in, we just had our one in Copenhagen. So I think the first thing is we're bringing the message to South Africa for the many customers we got in South Africa. So we can expect to see... Probably we're trying to do it a bit more warts and all, tell the customers how complex it is to actually do a migration to a hybrid cloud environment, and let some of the customers actually get up and explain the challenges they ran into. And then we'll talk a little bit about why it's relevant. So we've got Herman Singh, very well-known person in the industry locally.
Yeah.
And then we are going to finish off with Pai giving the strategy, you know,
okay.
Why Nutanix fits the bill.
So largely a customer event. Now, Pai, I'm sure most people listening to this podcast will know the name Nutanix at the very least, but maybe take us through the company solutions and where it's positioned in the market. A big part or a big focus for Nutanix is something called hyperconverged infrastructure, or HCI. Can you take us through what that is exactly and why it's important?
Of course. No, thank you, Duncan. So Nutanix is a 10-year-old company. We actually celebrated our 10-year anniversary back in September of this year. As a result of that, if you look at where we started off back in 2009, the world was starting to get more complex. You know, public cloud was starting to become something that was very tangible for enterprises to consider to run their workloads. I think if you look at the simplification of how applications were being deployed, I think smartphones are becoming something more of a, more beside being de rigueur, becoming more standardized in how simple life could be in a consumer world. So if mm-hmm. we combine the two and look at enterprises today, it's a fairly complex world of managing application infrastructure on those applications, and then introduce the public cloud into that mix of running data centers and public clouds. There was an opportunity to drive simplicity into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we started looking at where does Nutanix go, the opportunity to really look at, okay, how instead of having customers take the application and say, let me re-platform it to the public cloud, the intent of Nutanix, let's bring the public cloud architecture to enterprises so then they can figure out where to best run their applications and workloads, which is really the engine of enterprises, right? So the evolution of that was, where do customers store their data? Customers store their data in storage, which mm-hmm. is their data resides. And so the evolution of what is now called hyperconverged was, how do you bring that architecture of simplicity to an enterprise where data needs to be stored and applications need to access that data? And so we combine compute and storage into a single platform with a hypervisor, traditional hypervisor, which is, think of VMware, mm-hmm. And kind of collapse those tiers into a single platform, not unlike what a public cloud does, which is take software, not on an x86 platform,
yeah.
and make it simple to scale out. So mm-hmm. that was the intent of Nutanix, is break that level of architecture and make it simple to start with one workload and expand those workloads as you expand the infrastructure, not unlike how public clouds were built.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the evolution of Nutanix. And so we started small, focused on VDI as an initial workload. And now today, $1.6 billion in revenue, 15,000 customers in the making. We went public about 3 years ago and really demonstrated to the world that hyperconverged was a great starting point to really help customers build a private cloud and eventually move towards where Nutanix's strategy is, which is now move towards a hybrid cloud, public cloud, hybrid cloud, treating public cloud as an extension of your data center where you can run your applications, but maintaining the focus on making things simple.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gives you a bird's eye view of where we're going as a company.
And it's ironic we're talking about cloud this afternoon as a Joburg thunderstorm rolls in outside. So apologies for the background noise, but I think there's a tin roof on the building we're in at the moment. So, Pai, the idea is that you're kind of abstracting the hardware layer, right? And you're putting a software layer on top of that to make the management of it easier. So the hardware actually becomes not irrelevant, but much less important.
Yes. So if you think of, again, the comparison to the public cloud, right? People don't talk about hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you go to an Amazon Web Services or to a Google or to an Azure for the three main public cloud players, you don't ask them what hardware it runs on.
Yes.
Right? So whereas in the enterprise world, there's always been a marriage of hardware and software in the same tone.
Yes.
So the abstraction of hardware from software drives value into the software. And because software is malleable, software can be programmable, software can be driven as code, the ability to convert the data center to software is the journey Nutanix has been on, starting with storage and then adding in a hypervisor and adding in all the layers to make everything beneath the application as code.
Yes.
So then you start comparing that to what a public cloud looks like, so you can operate an application, be it in the private cloud world running a data center or a public cloud world running in an Amazon Web Services and Azure, almost to the same layer. So now you can program your application and either lift and shift it, which is the traditional world of moving to a public cloud, but really abstract the knowledge and make it simple to operate an application, because that's where the engine of the business is. So
yes,
the world of Nutanix is how do you make the entire data center programmable, make it infrastructure as code, if that's the popular word, right? And traditionally, enterprises have been running on virtual machines, right? VMware and, you know, the applications running on virtual machines. But the world is slowly moving towards considering containers to run applications, right? So now enterprises are grappling between, do I run it in a virtual machine? Now, how do I transform that into DevOps when running in a container, right? So Nutanix is now bridging that gap and now allows the same platform to run on any type of hardware. So we support all the major server vendors. We abstract all of our software run on those major server vendors, and now also allow customers run it as a virtual machine or as containers. So we abstract away not just from the hardware, but also from the hypervisor, abstract ourselves away from either running on a virtual machine or containers, as well as you move to the hybrid cloud world, provide an abstraction layer away from the public cloud lock-in as well. So really the challenge is how do we help our customers drive simplicity for the application so you know where best to run it and automating it through APIs to make it programmable.
And I suppose the hardware you're running becomes less relevant too. I mean, you can run off-the-shelf hardware and...
Exactly. Yeah. And the intent is to run it on off-the-shelf hardware so that you can choose today to run on a certain platform that you may have the best practices built on, either from procurement perspective or preferred vendor relationship perspective.
Yeah.
But then it gives you the ability to operationally no longer worry about if I change my hardware platform, my operation processes I don't need to retrain my people. I don't need to think about creating specializations based on specific hardware platform, be it compute platforms or storage platforms. You're now abstracting away from locking of understanding what those hardware platforms are. Because again, if I compare it to public cloud, you don't worry about the infrastructure.
Yes.
Right? And so in the early days of Nutanix, we used to call invisible infrastructure. So don't make infrastructure invisible, right? And now we're trying to make the entire data center invisible and eventually make the clouds invisible. So that's the kind of journey of how do you start with making storage invisible, making data centers invisible, and then eventually making the making clouds invisible. So customers can focus on the applications that are the engine that runs their business.
Okay. So based on what you've been saying, it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Nutanix it plays mainly in the on-premise and hybrid cloud environments, not so much in the public cloud space.
Correct. So so as customers consider public cloud as part of the core strategy and say, look, I want to have cloud first is not just public cloud first, because that's the analogy people typically associate with.
Yes.
Right? Cloud first is, think of cloud first being, how do I now build automation for my applications, right? How do I build a cloud-ready application so that I can move workloads between public cloud, right? So how do I scale out my infrastructure without thinking about buying hardware and then being locked into specific hardware, right? So cloud-ready and cloud-first is more of a methodology than a public cloud lock-in. And so where Nutanix's strategy is, how do you provide that invisibility from an infrastructure perspective, be it in the data center, be it at a server level, or be it at a public cloud level, so that you can now move workloads between public cloud and private cloud and find some level of automation. So that gives you an analogy of how we're starting to build and help customers build a true private cloud, because if you truly want to be in a hybrid cloud, right? The cloud genomics needs to be the same on both sides. So yes, we want to be API-driven, built on a single server platform like the public cloud. Everything is automated and simple to run an application, and that's how public cloud is. So if you truly have a cloud-first methodology and you have certain applications running on-premises, then that same heuristics of cloud-first should apply, whether it's running on the data center or whether you have a public cloud-first approach. So that's kind of the methodology of how do we make sure that people treat private cloud with the same level of respect that they're treating public cloud? Mm-hmm. Because hybrid cloud means private and public. Mm-hmm. And so Nutanix brings the methodology of treating that substrate of private cloud being the same level of automation, simplicity, scale-out approach that people have associated with the public cloud.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Pai, Nutanix is releasing some interesting new research this week. This is from your second Global Enterprise Cloud Index survey.
Yes.
This report looks at enterprise progress in adopting private, hybrid, and public cloud. In a nutshell, what are the key findings?
So some of the key findings are very interesting. So we've interviewed, I think, about 2,500 through a research firm. And some of the key findings we can know is 85% of these customers are considering hybrid cloud as the core strategy to build applications and deploy in the data centers. So number one, right? Be it private cloud or in the public cloud world. So that's where they want to run the application. Hybrid cloud seems to be the primary strategy of how they want to build the applications and deliver to the customers. More interestingly is the fact that 73% of them that had deployed in the public cloud are repurposing them back into the data center, which is an interesting strategy because people typically, as I said before, had this public cloud first strategy as, hey, I'm going to treat that as a way, as a primary way of how I'm going to deploy my applications. And what we found out from this research is that for many reasons, primarily being security, is the fact that they've decided to redeploy them, reconsider them running back in the private cloud, be it for compliance reasons, secure reasons, cost reasons, so on and so forth. The 73% of them repurposing these applications back into the data center, right? So that gives them the level of control that they didn't have before. So that's an example of why what Nutanix strategy of a true hybrid cloud kind of starting to ring true. And the other part is really around 60% of them are moving back is because of security being the primary reasons that they believe that they're moving back to the data center. So those are some of the key findings that we felt was speaking to the true authenticity of why Nutanix is built is true. You know, how do I treat the public cloud as an extension of my data center? And if I make a mistake, I can now repurpose those applications seamlessly back in without spending a heavy amount of heavy lift and shift, if that's the buzzword we can use today, to move it back onto the data center. So that's an example of what some of the key findings we found.
So do you think that some companies got ahead of themselves in the shift to public cloud? Do you think that, you know, there's a lot of buzz around around cloud computing. Do you think some companies went head first into this and actually went too quickly?
I think there's some level of due diligence that may have helped, but clearly there's some value that public cloud is here to stay. So Nutanix's strategy is, you know, treat public cloud as part of your hybrid cloud strategy, right? So, you know, even though we help customers build a private cloud, we make things simple for deploying applications in the data center, public cloud clears and everything that our customers, every customer that I talk to has a public cloud strategy as part of the overall enterprise architecture strategy, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like public cloud is not something you should consider, right? Now, at the same time, as certain customers said, look, I'm going to treat that as the only strategy, right? We've seen many different trends over the last 20, 30, 40 years that I've been in the business where going all in on something sometimes tends to be not the right fit for certain applications. So if it's a highly predictable workload and people are coming in every day and doing the same thing, it is much more cost efficient, and we've done many TCO analysis both in the South African market and at a global level where we are able to demonstrate that running it in a data center under the control and compliance that IT has built over the last many, many years, the enterprise has been in business, it could be more cost effective, right? And so Nutanix has been examples of that. But at the same time, going all in on something obviously has proven that this is not the right strategy. So what we are providing is a more cautious approach. So how do we come in, do the right due diligence, where we sit with customers and say, let's treat public cloud as an extension of your data center as a hybrid cloud model, which applications do reside in the data center. If you do make a mistake, it's okay. we have the tools and the capabilities to automate to bring them back in. So there are examples, you know, I'm sure you attended .next. We saw examples of how we demonstrated Xi clusters for AWS on stage, where we can extend an application to seamlessly run inside AWS, hibernate that back, and maybe even bring that back in seamlessly. That's an example of how you can now extend the public cloud. And then if you choose to bring it back, it's not a major architectural change in the data center. That's an example of how, in spite of people wanting to move to the public cloud, if they do change their strategy for the reasons of security, as this survey has shown, we want to give them the flexibility of, okay, if you make that, we want to make it simple to come back, which is the core tenets of why customers believe Nutanix is delivering that.
And I suppose that reduces a key worry for customers, which is public cloud vendor lock-in.
Correct. And any lock-in, right? So any lock-in, or if you're using those services now, if I choose to, you know, untether myself from that, how do we make it simple, right? Yeah. So that's kind of why, you know, a more, like I said, due diligence in making sure that the customer's cloud-first strategy is well thought out and the due diligence done to put data in. And if cloud vendors charge you for take data out, do you take that into TCO calculation of which applications go in, how much is being used, how much is being egressed out, and is that within the cost justifications of why you're choosing public cloud, is taking that consideration. Mm-hmm. And if you make that mistake, as certain customers, obviously the survey has found, coming back in is something simple and easy that we, as vendors and strategic vendors to our customers, can make it easy for them.
Paul, let me bring you back into the conversation here. I believe that the research report from Nutanix included a number of South African enterprise users as well. What are the trends here? How are they different to what we're seeing elsewhere in the world? And how far down the line are South African enterprises in their cloud journeys?
Yes, Duncan, so thanks. I think some of the interesting stats were we heard Pi talking about the global average being, you know, companies that are moving applications from public cloud to on-premise infrastructure. In South Africa, it's actually about 84%, so it's quite a bit higher.
Wow.
And a lot of those apps are actually headed into traditional data centers rather than private cloud. So that's quite interesting. And I think the biggest thing that we're seeing there is that cost is playing a huge role in what the South African CIOs are trying to manage. You know, I think the trading environment dictates that everybody is turning over all their pennies. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of the initiatives were driven by, I think, probably reasonably premature migrations into cloud. And they found it a lot more difficult to get into the cloud. So they've slammed on the brakes on a lot of those initiatives and have now started to look at how they could more effectively reutilize their on-premise IT assets. And I think in so doing, they're also realizing that the infrastructure that they're busy deploying on right now needs to be refreshed. So if you want to get into this nirvana of hybrid cloud, you can't do it with the existing legacy. So there's a lot of focus around what is the infrastructure we actually got on-premise at the moment, and if we modernize it, could we get ourselves into a hybrid cloud world? And this has shifted over the last 2 years. You know, we went from cloud first to all in on the cloud. And there's a nice slide Amazon have got as well. Maybe hybrid cloud doesn't look too bad. Well, here's some on-prem infrastructure, and hybrid cloud wins the day. You know, so it's like Pi said, you get this massive swing, everybody's latest flavor of the day, and then after that, people come back to reality, they balance it, and they look at their costs. Mm-hmm. So that's typically what we're seeing from a lot of larger customers.
Mm-hmm. And some of the conversations you're having, and also, what's the view among South African businesses? And Pai, feel free to jump in here on the global picture as well. But what are companies seeing as better suited to on-prem, and what is better suited to public cloud? Does it all come down to what they're allowed to put in the cloud set by the regulators in their industries? Or, I mean, what's the discussions that are happening?
So I think there's a number of pieces. Logically, there's a regulatory environment and a compliance side of it. Mm-hmm. And the you can't outsource risk. So, you know, you can't, if you have an issue in a cloud provider and they get hacked, you as the owner of the customer data are still going to be liable. So many enterprises just basically prefer to handle that on-premise risk. So that's always a driver, security and compliance. But I think the other thing is the nature of the workloads, and this is what people are starting to realize. And sometimes what they do is they deploy into the cloud until an application becomes static and it kind of consumes a certain amount of resource. And as soon as it starts doing that, then it's always going to be cheaper to bring it back on-prem.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, when you fly down to Cape Town, you don't buy a car, you hire a car. Until you move down to Cape Town for 3 months, then you buy a car, and that's kind of so the continuum of apps moving into and out of the cloud is that the byword everybody uses is an elastic app. In other words, does it consume resource? And do we know how much it's going to use? Once we know and it's stabilized, it's always going to be cheaper to run it on prem. And there are a lot of cloud governance tools, including some of ours, that are used around the space to check that sort of continuum out and advise enterprises to where it's better to deploy it.
Yes, sir. So let me add on to what Paul said at a global trend level. So a lot of customers have this cloud-first approach, right? And typically, like I said before, cloud-first typically hides that word public cloud-first.
Yes.
Right? And so when they go in and say, look, I'm going to look at public cloud, and they sign on to an AWS or an Azure, and they get a certain amount of credits, that incents them to take their workloads, relook at their applications, say, look, I'm going to lift and shift these applications into the public cloud, which really means rewriting these applications and spending time and money and resources in rewriting these applications, right? And so once you do that, they realize that it's the lift and shift is not as easy as what they thought it would, and it takes them longer and costs them more money. And so that's when they relook at the cost profile and say, okay, maybe it's not the right strategy for all my applications, back to what the survey said, right?
Yeah.
The second part of it is really around the hygiene that IT has built over the last 30 to 40 years that sometimes does not translate into cloud applications, right? So for example, I gave an example earlier this morning where when you walk out of the application running in the data center that's already costed in and capitalized and you don't shut it down and you come back in Monday morning and start the work application again, there's no cost because it's already costed in, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You do the same thing in the public cloud, the bills start racking up. So the hygiene of when you leave at Friday at 5 p.m., you need to have a process of shutting down these applications because if you don't, the cloud bill starts starting up and the next thing you know, you're like, why is my bill so high? It's because that level of IT hygiene sometimes not translate to a DevOps person who basically spins up an application with a credit card and doesn't realize that somebody's going to be charged, but I'm the charge, I'm the reason for it, right? So that level of hygiene sometimes overdrives the cost profile, which again, IT has built a practice for 30 to 40 years in building the hygiene of processes and things like that, that needs to over time apply to the public cloud model, which again, is a work in process or work in progress, but it's still not there yet. So that's one. I think the second one is really around what Paul talked about is really doing an assessment of applications and saying which applications truly are elastic and can benefit from this peak capabilities that public cloud truly delivers, which is if it's a predictable workload where people are coming in every morning, bootstrapping 20,000 desktops in the morning and saying, okay, I'm going to do the same workload every day, is the right profile of using the public cloud for that purpose, or is it more cost effective to run it as a private cloud? Running on Nutanix, for example. Mm-hmm. So those are the things where the TCO model, so we have a bunch of cloud economists in the company that do this due diligence saying, let's look at your profile as an enterprise. Let's look at the applications. Look at, compare them at what's running and what belongs in a predictable workload running on-prem versus which applications truly are designed for public cloud model.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get the right cost profile. And then an architecture level, let's make sure that if the profile changes, which it could, then you have the right architecture to automate the movement of these applications so that you're not locked in, but you're bringing some level of simplicity to a very complex multi-cloud world.
Mm-hmm. How involved does the business need to be in making these decisions? Because often these cloud projects form part of a broader digital transformation projects, which clearly are not something that should be just run by the IT department. What's the best practice in your view? What are companies doing? What are the best companies doing in this regard? And who's typically driving these processes? Is it left in the hands of the CIO, or is the project actually led by someone else?
No, I think it's led by the CEO, but at the same time, I think businesses have much more say. It's because digital transformation is a great buzzword, but digital transformation has to be tied to business transformation.
Yes,
which means every person in the company has a change methodology they have to go through, because it affects every person, every business unit, not just IT. IT can provide the tools and the methodologies, but businesses themselves had to transform. So for example, you know, if you're going to log in every day as a person, then every login has to be digitized. Mm. So that when you log in and that information is captured, then that digital transformation applies to every person in the company. So it affects not just IT, not just the business, but a partnership in business and IT, so that IT can deliver the tools to drive innovation that delivers the business transformation that the business has said is what my digital journey is going to be. So it's an all-in approach that customers need to make, but digital transformation is a great buzzword, but business transformation that applies to the entire company is what truly is going to make success in the business.
Yeah. Do you almost need a role, a person within the organization at executive level who kind of sits in the middle between IT and the CEO or the executive management team and helps have that conversation in the company?
Absolutely. And I think they have to and unfortunately it's not a single set of skills, right?
Yeah.
It's not an IT skill, it's not a business skill.
Yeah.
It's actually a team of people that are sponsored by the CEO saying, look, we're going to do this business transformation, of which digital transformation is a core part of that strategy.
Like but a transformation office. Mm.
Exactly, right? And that spans IT, it spans business units that are core to the business.
Mm.
It spans the office of the CEO, it spans finance people, it spans architects, because it's a multifaceted role that just not one person, because one person will not have that kind of skill set, but it's more of an orchestration of skill set that speaks to the CEO and says, here's the mandate you've asked me to do, but it's going to be a multi-year journey that's going to affect every part of the business, and I need you to champion it. It's because it's going to be a change to the business as a whole, but here's the outcome you're going to see.
Yeah.
Right? And you see many companies that are successful at it and many companies that are, you know, failures at making the transformation, because it needs to be championed, not as an IT, but not as a business, but as a partnership in IT and business.
How many people are getting it wrong? I mean, are there fundamental mistakes happening across the board, or do you think most companies are generally getting it right?
Well, sometimes people associate digital transformation with cloud first.
Yeah.
Right, because an easy association to make, saying, look, if I go cloud first, then I get into a world of API driven, I can automate things and digitize everything and capture, right? But again, back to the earlier conversation, that's not the only solution. So how do I digitize my business where it is today? So a lot of customers have, again, back to the story around hybrid cloud, saying, how do I digitize my business, because my IP that's core to my business needs to stay in my data center, but I'm going to use my public cloud assets. And and what public cloud has shown is possible, again, digital transformation of everything being API is here to stay. So how do I make my entire data center API capable, right? And how do I make my applications portable?
Yeah.
Right? How do I therefore repurpose, redesign my application to be cloud ready? So I can take advantage of public cloud. So again, all of those are great buzzwords, but as an architect, as this team you were talking about, needs to take the business imperatives in mind, needs to take the IT initiatives in mind, needs to take cost profiles in mind, needs to take the public cloud capabilities in mind, and put all those together and come out with a milestone driven approach that spans many, many years, that drives to the business outcome that can be driven over time with clear KPIs that are set every 6 months to a year, so that you can speak to the CEO and say, hey, I'm delivering the outcomes, but in bite-sized chunks, not an all-in approach.
Yeah.
So hopefully that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. Just as a matter of interest, what are the risks if companies simply continue doing things the way they are doing things? Is there the option to ignore the cloud discussion altogether? Is that an option for some industries?
I wish like this answer was true, but no. I think public cloud over the last 10, 12 years that has been a platform strategy for many companies, I think clearly it has demonstrated that there's a different way of computing.
Yes.
Right? Everything is an API. Right? Containers can make things portable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you look at that world, it really demonstrates that the way things have been built, right? So if I look at my history, right, I cut my teeth on mainframes a long time ago, right? So an architecture of how mainframe architecture was built 30, 40 years ago is still that today. You still have a compute farm. You still have a storage farm. You still have a network farm, right? You still have a virtualization farm, right? So it's still the silos of where enterprise architecture was built 30, 40 years ago. Today, data centers still have that. Public cloud has shown that you don't need that. Software is able to transform that business. Intel has proven that you can deliver the kind of processing power that you can now transform and not have that hardware-driven approach.
Yes.
So public cloud has demonstrated that you can take software, run it on standard x86 hardware, and deliver the kind of computing that public cloud has proven that you can run enterprise-grade applications and deliver value to the business.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So now, how do you bring the two together is what Nutanix's opportunity is, to bring that hybrid cloud world, but bring the homogeneity of what cloud should mean, be it public cloud or private cloud with a cloud-first model.
Paul, we're going to wrap up in a moment, but I'll leave the last word to you. You obviously have conversations all of the time with CIOs, IT decision makers in corporate South Africa. Those conversations, maybe just touch a bit on what the CIOs are telling you are their pain points, what are they trying to address? And from a Nutanix perspective, what message do you seek to convey to them about what they should be thinking about?
So I think a lot of the stuff we see is that there's a lot of, you know, comes out in our survey around the cloud, some of the stats around the cloud. People are looking at costs very heavily, so we talked about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Skills are always an issue. So
yep.
There's a kind of a hope that by taking things and putting them off-prem into public clouds, you may overcome the skills issue. I think that fallacy has now been, seen to be hollow, because you just need another set of skills. In fact, probably a lot more complex skills. So then we're seeing the cost overruns coming from, there's an interesting new word in the survey, an overage. It's when your costs for the cloud are a lot higher than what you expect. And I think that's because people just are now literally starting to understand that you're now running something, you're running a data center, you're just running it at a distance.
Yeah.
So your apps are sitting in a hosted in a data center that's in front of a cloud provider. And I think a lot of them are now starting to realize that there's no nirvana in this, that they have to re-architect it and look at it solidly. And this is where things like architecture really matter. So there's a slide we use, just a summary of Yahoo was the darling of the internet search age. They're nowhere at the moment. Google eclipsed them effectively. And if you drill into the details, there's a nice study that shows how Google actually used a cloud architecture,
mm-hmm,
based on a software distributed architecture. And the result was that they scaled at a much better cost point, about 8 times cheaper than Yahoo. So the learning is, I think, that architecture matters, because a company that invested heavily in architecture and became the lowest cost operator in its industry was able to eclipse others in an operating model. So to your point around, does cloud make a difference? Well, cloud underpins the digitization process. That's a business discussion. Business guys know what's going on around how to digitize their business. But if you've got an architecture that you can operate at a multiple of 5 or 6 times your competitor, he's going to eat your lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a lot of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
So people are now really looking to say, how can I take the cost out of the business, which is reflected in the survey, and how would that look like? So I think we've got a tough operating environment at the moment. And I think people are starting to come to the realization that cloud first and cloud only and cloud native is becoming hybrid, and they're realizing that Nutanix provides the options and the less lock-in. You're not going to put it all in one cloud and then get locked into that cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're seeing as the takeaway. People are realizing they've got options now.
Great. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you.
Pai Venugopal, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, you have. Thank you.
Is Vice President for Customer Success at Nutanix, and Paul Reinhardt is Nutanix's Regional Sales Director. Thanks for talking to Tech Central.
Thank you very much, Pai.